This is a story about me sitting in a little room for much too long. By the end of the story, I'm going to get up and leave the little room. There's not a lot of action. There's not a lot of scenery. If you're thinking you have to pee or get a refill of coffee, you might have found your moment. So the story is 15 years ago, I've been working on a TV show. It was my own idea. I had sold it to Comedy Central. I went down to Los Angeles. I wrote 10 scripts. They filmed 6 of them, and then they pulled the plug. They put the shows on the air once and buried them away. It was not a success. But the door was open just a little bit. And now I had an agent, and I had met some producers, and they were saying, you know, stay down here, take meetings, push yourself, put your name out there. Maybe you can work on somebody else's show. But I had a family, and we were living in Tierra Nueva co-housing in Oceano, and I had 2 kids. The oldest was not quite 4 years old. And I had been for 6 months living in a corporate apartment down in Los Angeles and working on this TV show. And I come back, and the first morning, I go into the room, and there's my son. He's 1.5 years, and he looks at me, and he says, "Mommy." And my wife walks in, and he says, "Mommy." And she puts the phone down on the table, and he says, "Daddy." So I had a choice. It wasn't Sophie's choice. I mean, it was Sophie's choice for assholes, you know. I mean, I knew what I had to do and what I wanted to do. I wanted to do the right thing, to watch my kids grow up. But I had to figure out how to make a living. And there wasn't a lot that I was suited for. I mean, I was kind of a clever guy, but, you know, like, I wasn't a handyman. I was the epitome of the handless man. I was proof of that old proverb that you don't put Jews and power tools in the same room. I knew that I liked movies, and that if you worked in TV, you had to be down in Los Angeles. But Hollywood had this wonderful, this glorious tradition of treating writers with total disregard. And that, you know, they take your script, they'd bring in 5 different people to rewrite it, and then they pay you and never want to see you. And that sounded like the job for me. So we had a little room in our house. We turned it into my office, and I thought, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to write a script. I'm going to sell it, keep the family afloat. That was the plan. So I go in, and I wrote this light, frothy, romantic comedy set in New York City, just a real souffle of a story. And the agent liked it. And he made a list of all the producers and studio executives that he was going to give it to. And I remember him on the phone reading me the list of all the names. And I'm thinking there, yeah, great. This is going all according to plan. And the day came, and he sent that script out to everybody on the list. And that day was September 11th, 2001. Now, this is the most petty 9/11 story you're ever going to hear. And maybe there's somebody who's still complaining because he had a coupon for a free falafel that day and couldn't get to the restaurant. But, you know, I probably win the award, and I'm not proud of it. But that's how it went down. Nobody wanted to make a light, frothy, souffle-like romantic comedy set in the suddenly horribly damaged city of Manhattan. So that script went to the bottom of everybody's pile, and my little bit of savings was gone, and I was in a professional free fall. Now, when your wife goes back to work because you're not making enough money to support the family, you know, you understand that intellectually, and you make your peace with it politically and sociologically. I mean, I absolutely believe in gender equality, but on a primal, genetic gender level, there was this inner Neanderthal man that was very pissed. and scowling at me because I had messed things up. And I knew that I had to set things right, get everything back on course. I was going back in the little room. And I wrote a comedy about 20-year-olds living on their parents' credit cards. I wrote a script about a guy who could see ghosts. He could see dead people. And they were all bored out of their minds and watching us and betting on what we were going to do next. There was a black comedy about a biogenetic mishap on an American cattle farm. And then I wrote one that made it into the hallways of power. I wrote a script called The Boss's Daughters. And it was about, you know, a rising young star in a corporation, and he was engaged to the apple of the CEO's eye, you know, his favorite daughter. And then the black sheep daughter comes into town, and chaos ensues, and he falls in love with her, and fade in, fade out, send me the check. And I had a production company excited about it, and it went to Paramount. And, you know, I walked around knowing that they're going to read it at the studio. And when you sense that something big and potentially life-changing is going to happen, but you have no control over the process, you become very superstitious. And I was hyper-aware of signs and tea leaves that the, you know, universe was putting in front of me. And you can imagine how I felt when I went on the internet one morning and saw that Ashton Kutcher was starring in a movie called The Boss's Daughter. Daughter. Just one daughter. And I call the production company, we have the S. We have plurality. We're going to win. We'll be different. Everybody can tell. They didn't agree. They wanted to change the project to The Wrong Daughter. And that whiff of negativity I knew was going to sink us. And, you know, Paramount said no. And there was my professional shit list. Al-Qaeda and Ashton Kutcher. But I knew what to do. I knew how to bounce back into the little room. Now, admittedly, there were those in my inner circle who were getting a little concerned. My wife reminded me of Einstein's definition of an insane person, which is somebody who keeps doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. My mother asked me point blank, did I really think I had something left to give to Hollywood? But she didn't ask it that way. She asked it with that kind of nervous hysteria of the, you know, 70-year-old woman looking at her adult son knee-deep in quicksand. And it was, you know, do you really think you have something left to give Hollywood? You know, just one gasp away from a shriek in the night. But I did think that I had something left. And I was back in the little room, a comedy set at a food and wine festival up in Paso Robles. A modern day telling of Grimm's fairy tale, you know, the fisherman and his wife. A comedy called Stay Home Dad, about a stay-home dad who, after 20 years of watching the kids and taking care of the house, you know, sees his corporate wife leave him, and he's got to figure out what to do with his life. Slightly prescient, but funny. And then I just had to face the facts that nobody was reading the stuff. You know, the agent had dropped me long ago. I was just a guy with a lot of unproduced screenplays. And when you're telling a story about somebody who won't leave the little room, there's not a big plot twist. You know, nobody kicks in the door and takes me hostage. One morning, I'm walking the dogs, and it's clear that nobody's going to read Stay Home Dad, and I'm saying to myself, okay, what am I going to write next? Because, you know, I always had ideas in my quiver. And a little voice said, yeah, I'm done. And that was hard to argue with, because it was honest and exhausted. And relieved. And, you know, I think it's fine if you love writing that sometimes you allow yourself the fantasy of, wow, what if somebody plays this part? Or what if I get a good review? But I had set up this elaborate string of dominoes. You know, an agent was going to fall in love with the script, give it to a red-hot director. They'd fall in love with it, get an A-list actor, an A-list actress. They'd bring the package to the studio. The studio would fall in love with it, get overseas financing, get domestic financing. They'd make the movie. Audiences would buy tickets. They would love it as well. I'd get my next job. And I realized that I have to stop having dreams where everybody else does most of the work. So I got up, moving on, and walked out of the little room. And, you know, San Luis Obispo is very nice. I walked out of the little room, And I came here tonight to tell a story. I appreciate your listening, and please feel free to come up and say hi, because I don't know anybody.